Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello, I'm Callum Stoneman, and welcome to another Tech Talk from RNIB Connect Radio, our weekly chance to get together and explore what's new and what's going on in the world of technology from a blind and partially sighted perspective. If you want to get in contact with us, please do. As we always say, it's very much your programme. techtalk@rnib.org.uk is our email address. That's techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Coming up this week, we'll be hearing about how accessible the gaming platform Steam can be for blind and partially sighted users. We'll have another tech timeline, and we'll be getting ourselves organised with the Todoist app for iOS and Android. Getting ourselves organised, about time, I know. We don't have Jackie Brown with us this week, but we do have Hubert Pavalkovich and Natalie Curran. Let's see what's going on with you guys. Hubert, what's caught your attention this week?
So we talked, I believe it was a while back, about Nest doorbells and cameras bringing in video AI descriptions. Now, this is an early stage, but Ring are following suit with beta versions of video descriptions generated by AI, of course, coming in for Ring Premium users, for now in the US. But I thought it was quite nice because it's nice to see with Ring accessibility kind of side of things, something developing, especially that recently the accessibility of the Ring app in certain elements I found quite difficult, especially with, for example, the live view where you can unmute yourself to speak to someone, but VoiceOver doesn't actually react well with that button because, one, it doesn't actually tell you whether it's unmuted or muted, so sometimes you don't actually know what the status of that switch is. But I thought it's a nice step forward. I'm not sure, A, when we'll see it in the UK, and B, presumably that might be a premium feature anyway, but yeah, that's a little bit of news from me, which I think is quite nice for Ring users, which I look forward to hopefully seeing a bit more of, because for me it's a step forward in accessibility, which I think Ring needs.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that's kind of the reason that I gave up on my Ring doorbell and stuff, because of the, well, I was having other issues as well, to be fair, but a big part of it was the accessibility of the app. I mean, I don't know if you remember the days of the Rapid Ring app instead of the main one.
No, I think I switched to Ring 2020, I think, or 21. I can't remember the Rapid app.
You might have just missed it. There was an app. So you had the main Ring app, which had all your settings and your lights, if you had them, and security. Like, I've still got the Ring alarm system, which works really nicely. But Rapid Ring was a tiny little app, and it was literally just for viewing footage. So when your doorbell went off, you'd get a notification from Rapid Ring, and that was basically all it did was just live view. So it cut down all those times of like where it's just loading and, you know, delayed at connecting, and yeah, all it had was just that live view screen, and it was really nice. But then yeah, they discontinued it, and then the main app just seemed to go downhill. But yeah, it's nice that they're bringing that in there. I don't know, have we seen this on the Nest ones yet? Because I've not seen it on mine, unless it's still a US only.
That's what I'm thinking. I think it could be a still US only thing because it was still very much beta when it was announced. So I think it could be still in the US only if you yourself haven't seen it. Plus also, there's always a question of, you know, do you have to have the latest Nest device for this to be supported, or can it, you know, it's, or can any device now have it? It's there's a few questions on that.
Well, hopefully we'll find out a bit more about that as it from Ringside anyway, as it goes through the beta phase. Natalie, anything new with you this week?
Hi, Callum. Nothing so much new, as I did have a rather unorthodox experience with seeing AI earlier this week. So, as I've mentioned before in this programme, I'm very nervous of dogs, but I do have a pet cat. And at the weekend, he decided to bring me a little present, which I wasn't too thrilled about. And the way I discovered this was he came running in the house, and instead of coming to me for either cuddles or food, he went upstairs. And I thought, that's not normal. And I went to the stairs, and I found him lying on the stairs, clearly very happy with something, but I couldn't tell what. And I thought, no, No. You've not brought something in. Well, I thought you have. So I braced myself. I went up the stairs very slowly and picked him up and deposited him outside and shut the door. I then thought, I don't want to feel across every step trying to find a possibly live, possibly dead mouse or whatever. That does not sound like my idea of fun. So I thought, I'll get Seeing AI out. So I got Seeing AI out. I set the setting to description and I took a photo, and it did indeed confirm that there was a dead mouse on the stairs. And I thought, brilliant. I'm still not sure which step it is on. So I thought about putting my hand down as a marker and thought, nope, because what if the mouse comes running at my hands? That does not appeal either. So I got a bit of kitchen roll, and using that as a marker, I took a couple of photos. And with the kitchen roll on the stairs, Seeing AI was able to say dead mouse is on the stair above or stair below. Got it onto the right step, and then just using the Seeing AI descriptions, managed to pick the mouse up with the kitchen roll for the first time. And I thought it was dead because Seeing AI said it was dead. But as I start to walk downstairs, it starts to wriggle. It's not dead. It wants to escape. So I run outside, deposit it gently on the garden path, and then run back in before it could follow me.
I mean,
So I have never been more grateful for Seeing AI in my life.
wonder if when Microsoft were developing Seeing AI, that was the sort of thing they had in mind.
At least it identified the animal correctly. I remember taking a picture of a pigeon at a bus station with Seeing AI once, and it described it as a cat. And I'm like, well, that's an interesting looking cat.
Well, at first it called it debris, and then when I got a better shot, it said dead mouse. And as I pointed out, it was not dead. It was very much still going.
I mean, that sounds like my worst nightmare, to be fair, but yeah, I'm with you on not just going for it, like just feeling around for it. Yeah, I would not be doing that.
Oh
No,
no.
no.
Yeah, I did say it to a colleague once. I said the only thing worse than having a mouse in the house is being blind and having a mouse in the house. Yeah, so I thought I'd share that with the listeners in case anybody else is in a similar pickle at any stage.
I remember talking to the guys from Be My Eyes, and they were saying, I don't know if this made it onto air, I don't think it did, but I was asking them about, what was the kind of strangest calls they've had, or, most surprising calls. And there were so many use cases. I'm not going to mention them because, as I said, I think it was an off-air chat, but there was just so many things that they were surprised about that they never expected people to use it for. I'm telling you now, that's up there with Seeing AI. That really is. Kind of something new from me this week. I've heard a bit about this, but Meta AI seems to be getting absolutely everywhere for me. So a couple of months ago, it appeared in Messenger, and now it's appeared in my WhatsApp. So I don't know if anyone else has seen this, but I don't really get. I mean, I barely use Facebook Messenger anyway, but WhatsApp I use all the time. So I kind of thought, okay, well, is this just an interface, or is this, can it actually tie into my conversations? So, like, what was that? If I was to say, like, what was that phone number that Hubert sent me last week? Could it tell me that? So I asked it, and it said, nope, your messages are all private and encrypted, and I can't access them. So I'm a little bit like, well, okay, apart from being an easy place to chat to it, is there really much point to this? I don't understand. I don't really understand when you would use it in that context.
That's interesting, Cal, that you've only just seen it, because seeing it on WhatsApp was one of the first places I noticed it. And I'll confess, I've not tried it out, but I assumed it was just a bit like, you mentioned it a few weeks ago when we were talking about smart home devices. You don't necessarily have to have the device to download the apps like the Amazon Alexa app. And on there you can chat to Alexa, and I assumed it was a similar kind of feature. But it's interesting that it's in Facebook Messenger, because actually I find Messenger's not so accessible these days. I don't know what they've done to it or when they did it to it, but they've definitely gone backwards in my opinion.
Yeah, it's not great.
I've tried Meta AI on WhatsApp, and the fun thing about it, you can actually have it like an actual conversation in your list of chats, and you can just ask it questions like you would, any other AI like a ChatGPT or anything else. Basically, you can have it as a chat, but the problem with this is the way you kind of add it to your list of chats is very tricky, because while you're flicking through your chats, at some point VoiceOver will say Meta AI, and if you don't tap, if you don't double tap the screen quickly enough, it will disappear. But if you're lucky enough to tap it, like a ghost hunting kind of exercise, if you tap it quickly enough, it will then be caught and it will feature in your list of chats, and you can chat to it like you would to anyone else and ask it the usual questions you would ask an AI.
Yeah, so that happened to me a couple of weeks ago. I was flicking through my chats, and it's happened maybe two or three times. I've heard it say Meta AI, and then, like you said, it's just gone. So I'm like, I'm exploring by...
As soon as you hear it, double tap.
Yeah, I'm exploring by touch. I'm like feeling around. I'm swiping back to the same place it was. And I'm like, okay, well, maybe it's not there yet. And VoiceOver's just picked up on something. And then it happened again. So I'm like, what is going on? And then, yeah, third time it happened, I did the same as you, just quickly double tap it. And then, yeah, it appeared.
You caught it.
I was hoping that.
Sounds like you've been haunted by Meta AI, Callum.
I think I am. The only thing with this, though, I was hoping that this would give more functionality to like the glasses, because I was thinking you could send a video to Meta AI via WhatsApp and get a description, but you can't. It can only accept text.
I've tried that as well. Yeah. I was very disappointed.
Well, if you've been using Meta AI or any of these other AI services in your messaging apps, let us know, because they're definitely becoming a bit more... I think they're trying to become a bit more social and a bit easier to talk to rather than having to have dedicated apps. So let us know if you've found any uses for that. techtalk@rnib.org.uk. All right, guys, stick with us. This is Tech Talk.
Now on Tech Talk, it's time to talk gaming once again. Now, some gamers around us listening would have heard the name Steam for quite a few years. I myself, as a gamer, have been familiar with the existence of the platform, but never actually familiar with using it. But there has been some accessibility news regarding the Steam platform. But what exactly is it, and how much accessibility has been improved? We are about to find out, because joining me is our gaming expert, of course, at the RNIB, Accessible Gaming Officer, Mr. Sightless Combat is back. How are you, sir?
Hello, I'm doing very well, thank you. Good to be back, even if, as of the time of recording, the weather is being far too hot for most people's liking, I would argue. It's good to be back and talking about a very interesting topic that has very recently had developments.
I've always heard of Steam, even as a child. My brother used to always use this, or, well, use it at times. But for those that do not know or have not really heard of it, what is Steam?
Steam is a long-running PC distribution platform. It's probably the biggest PC distribution platform in the world at this point. It's one of the most well-known, if nothing else. And it was designed, put together by Valve for their various games, and it's kind of just grown from there. So Valve have created games like Counter-Strike, Portal, Half-Life, you know, those kinds of games. And, you know, Counter-Strike and Half-Life would have been where you might have heard of Steam in the early days. But it's since grown to, you know, monolithic proportions, and pretty much any game that's releasing, or the vast majority of games you can find on Steam, outside of course the console exclusives, which is, you know, somewhat obvious anyway. But yeah, it's a platform that's been around for a very long time, since, you know, the early 2000s, if not before, and it's grown to massive heights in recent years.
What sort of platforms is it available on? What sort of devices can have Steam on them?
There are a number of devices that can have Steam on them, actually. There are, of course, PCs, you know, supporting, you know, Windows, Mac, those kinds of things. But there is also a device called a Steam Deck. And there are other handhelds as well being produced that, you know, can have Steam on them in the form factor of what's called Steam OS, which is basically Valve's operating system designed around Steam specifically. So it's not like, oh, you have Windows and then you have Steam, as you would on a, say, a Windows PC. It is instead a, you know, a Steam only operating system, though I haven't used it myself, and that's for a reason that we're going to come on to, because Steam OS historically hasn't had, if we look at the Steam Deck as an example, it hasn't had accessibility in, you know, for gamers without sight like myself, or, you know, necessarily much in the way of accessibility at all until sort of now. We'll come on to why sort of in a minute.
Up until what we're going to talk about in a minute, what was the state of Steam's accessibility for blind and partially sighted gamers?
So the state of Steam accessibility has been a topic of much conversation over the past, I would say, 8 or so years. I actually had the opportunity to go to Valve and have a chat with a bunch of people there, which is not something a lot of people get to say. They sort of work a lot behind closed doors, do Valve. But I had the chance to go there and share my experiences with Steam at the time. And at the time, it was sort of usable, but it wasn't a great experience for screen readers. There were things that you couldn't do because they weren't labeled well enough, or you had to get assistance because things just weren't visible at times. But that was, several years ago, and things have moved on. As of, the last few years, we've seen big picture mode, as it's called, which is basically a console-like experience. So, a grid-based list of games, that kind of thing, with various menus and menu interfaces and things that you can browse through with a controller being prominent. And that's had its own, improvements as well, because there was a time where that wasn't usable at all, and now it is. But that even is getting improvements. So it's been improving, but it's taken a long time to happen. There have been people wondering, how do I get a screen reader onto my Steam Deck? And because to get slightly technical for a second, because Steam OS is, as far as I can remember, built on a version of what's called Linux, which is a different operating system. So you have, your Windows, your Mac OS, and your Linux, operating systems. Steam OS is kind of built on a version of that. But even though there's a screen reader or two for Linux, getting that into Steam OS has proven quite tricky, from what I understand from those who have tried.
With Steam, as with other kind of gaming-related devices, I guess there's also an accessibility element which depends to the accessibility of the actual gaming titles itself, correct?
Of course, I mean, if you can have an accessible platform, but you equally, as much as you can have an accessible platform, if the games aren't accessible, then, why buy the platform? I mean, not to necessarily throw shade specifically, but I didn't pre-order a Switch 2 because, I'd heard, there's a screen reader, that's brilliant, but I'd also heard that screen reader was going to be very minimally supported as of launch, which indeed it was, and that I heard after launch that you would need assistance to actually set the device itself up to even get to the point of being able to use the screen reader, which kind of nullifies the point of it being there in the first place, you could argue. And even then, of course, there aren't, to my understanding, that many, if any, exclusives that are fully playable without assistance. So, hence I didn't pre-order it. The same could be said for, other platforms where there aren't necessarily as many exclusives or games that are fully playable. People, why would you buy a platform when, I'm not going to be able to play the games on it, kind of thing, is the general question. But with Steam, you've got titles like Last of Us Part 1, Part 2, God of War Ragnarok, associated caveats with that one, with the guide that I've assisted in co-writing. But as much as there are titles that have levels of playability or are fully playable, you've got Forza as well, for instance, Forza Motorsport. The fact of the matter is that as much as that might be true, there are potentially still some issues that are going to be, sort of encountered by developers and players because of the way these features are set up. And we don't know how those are going to work for a very specific reason, which we will come on to in terms of the latest developments.
We will indeed, and we're going to do this right now. So there have been some accessibility improvements made to Steam recently, which for gamers is always exciting. Can you take us through what are some of the, well, what are the improvements? What are the accessibility changes?
So the big thing, really, at least for me, was, so I saw an announcement posted on a Discord server I'm a part of, and then I'd seen it sort of talked about in a couple of other places as well. And then I went to look, and the big announcement really for me is that Steam is now getting a screen reader in Steam OS, and there are going to be accessibility improvements to Big Picture as well. The mode we talked about earlier. There are other things in terms of, sort of filters and elements for those with usable vision, which are also discussed in the post that was put out by Valve. But the screen reader is kind of the big one for games without sight. And they even mention having a shortcut to turn it on. Now, the big thing about this is these features are not currently released and they are in beta, thereby meaning there will be bugs, there will be things that don't work. But the fact that this is being done at all speaks volumes, I would argue, because this has been a very long time coming. People have been saying, I would love to use a Steam Deck, but I can't use a Steam Deck. I've said that myself. You can use a Steam Deck with Windows, but that is a whole other, kettle of fish that we're not going to get into here, because that has its own complications. So being able to, in theory, in the future, buy a Steam Deck or a Steam handheld and just play games on it out of the box, set it up on your own, maybe, it would be amazing. Now, I've talked to a few people who've tried this or are looking into trying it. They're very excited. There's a lot of buzz around this. But unfortunately, there hasn't been any success in getting the feature working. It may be that it hasn't released fully to various regions and things. We don't know about the stipulations of where these features are going to become available, how the rollout's going to work. But the fact of the matter is that Valve are considering accessibility for gamers with sight loss, which is a huge win if it can come off as well as we hope.
Is there any developments or, on improving accessibility of the apps? We've talked about SteamOS and devices like the Steam Deck, but is that going to impact the accessibility of Steam apps on, say, Windows or macOS, for example?
Yes, I mean, the big picture side of things is improved now as of a recent beta that was different to this one. So they've been sort of working on multiple elements of accessibility, I would say, from what I've seen. It will improve under certain aspects. The screen reader specific improvement, from what I recall, won't come to big picture, but that's not necessarily an issue depending on how well it works. I haven't seen this firsthand, any of this, so. We might come back to that as a future discussion point once it's out in the wild and we can sort of see it all working in practice to see what it looks like. But the Steam client itself is the main point of focus, and for now it's looking pretty usable on Windows. I mean, I even to give you an idea of how useful this is, I actually, with a small amount of extra work to sort of get used to the interface, I managed to purchase a copy of Dead Space, the remake, because there's a guide being worked on behind the scenes by the wonderful Zammer, who's done some work on it over the years, and I've looked at Zammer's work before, and I thought I'm going to try and get the PC version because the PC version was on sale. So I thought I'm going to test the Steam interface out on Windows and see if I can purchase a game just through Steam itself, and I managed it. It took a little extra work because I wasn't used to how the interface was going to, appear on my screen without it being directly in a web browser, but it was better than before. So there is proof there that by making your client, your purchase system, and of course having a reason to buy the game, by making all of those things accessible and the titles having accessibility to a varying degree, you will then get increased funds. Increased accessibility equals increased sales. But in terms of how this improvement will impact the future, I'm not sure because, as I say, we haven't really seen much. The big news is these features are coming, they exist. Here's basic information. That's kind of the news we're at the moment. But it is a big landmark in terms of making these kinds of things more accessible and easy to approach when you're, just starting out as a gamer, let's say.
Are there any other caveats we should be aware of for now, or is it a case of it's still very much early days?
I would say keep an eye on this, wait for extra news and thoughts and information to be available, and then, as in have things confirmed to be working, for example, and then have a look, because I, for one, won't be reformatting my Steam Deck to use SteamOS just to then find out, oh, it doesn't work yet. So, because that would be infuriating for anybody. But in terms of this, there's possibilities it won't work with, it won't work with games that require mods and things in certain cases. There's mods I can think of where there's been discussions around whether those will work under these new features on SteamOS. So there will still be games that you'll definitely want to play on Windows, just because of the way they've been put together by the community. But by the same token, there might be other games where accessibility might just work out of the box now. I'm thinking of like the visual novel style of things where it might support the screen reader implementation. But as I say, we don't know. There are lots of fun unknowns here that could potentially lead to interesting, experiences in the future without having to just rely solely on Windows.
If people would like to give the Steam client a go, maybe, I presume there are costs involved when it comes to game titles individually themselves, but is there a cost to using Steam?
There is no cost to using Steam. Steam is free to download, free to try, free to have a look at, I guess you could say as well, by that respect. There are free titles on Steam as well, which is good to know. There are definitely free games out there. I'm thinking of, a couple of one or two visual novels that I've seen over the years that are free, for instance. I believe Sequence Storm may have gone free to play as well, a rhythm racing game, which is very, very cool. And of course, there's demos as well, like Bits and Bops, the rhythm game, has a demo, and that was recently, I believe, updated and may still be up with that version from the Steam Next Fest. And then, of course, there are sales on every so often with Steam. So even if a game is looking ludicrously expensive as of the time of writing, it might be that by the time there's a sale on, that price will have changed dramatically and you'll be able to potentially afford it. So yeah, but there is no cost to using Steam to, the multiplayer side of it, any of that, unless you're looking at like apps with subscriptions and things, which do exist. They do potentially exist. So, but that yeah, it's a free client. You can go and just, if you type in, Steam client into Google and go to the Valve sites, you should be able to find it. Although it is labeled on the store, for instance, it is labeled as store.steampowered.com for some strange reason that they've kept around for a long time. So it might seem a little odd, but as long as you double check the legitimacy of the site you're going to, then you should be okay, as long as you're careful and vigilant, as you should be with any downloads.
What accessible titles would you recommend for people to start with who may be new to using the Steam client?
I mean, any title is going to be, well, not any title, but there are titles that I can think of off the top of my head. But whatever title you choose, the fact of the matter is the Steam client will be the same sort of learning curve either way. You can buy titles through the web, you can buy titles, as I've said, in the big picture interface. There are various ways to do it. You could even potentially look at the mobile app as well. There's lots of ways to access this ecosystem. But I'm thinking of titles, if you've got the specs to run it, Last of Us Parts 1 and 2 are now on PC, fully accessible without the need for assistance. Well, I wouldn't say fully accessible. There are caveats to their various options and the way mechanics work. But by the same token, they are fully playable. You can go through all of the story and the various extra content as well, without the need for assistance necessarily. You've got stuff like Sequence Storm, as I say, rhythm racing game, very good fun, brutally hard in places. You've got Audio Game Fantastique, Rococo Audio Game Fantastique. It's a music themed maze game, I guess you could call it. Music themed sort of maze game collectathon. That was a very fun, interesting game that I don't believe I ever finished, because the final level is very intense and stressful, but good fun, very well put together. And then, of course, you've got things like Forza Motorsport as well. A massive learning curve there, but if you pick it up and you decide to speed around a few ovals, that's good fun, at least in my personal opinion. Of course, it's all going to vary based on what you want to look for. And if you're interested, then there are websites out there that can sort of advise you and maybe give you suggestions as to what to look for, depending on your genres of choice.
Fantastic. We will certainly keep on top of this story and any future developments in accessibility of, Steam and gaming in general. For now, though, Mr. Sightless Combat, RNIB's accessible gaming officer, thank you very much for joining us here on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you for having me.
Let's talk about task manager apps. So, I'm just going to be honest about it. My memory is absolutely terrible. And as a result of that, I find myself relying quite a lot on lists and reminders to help me keep on track, keep on top of what I need to be doing, and just generally keep my life organised, really. Now, for a while, I've used the Apple Reminders app on my phone and my Mac, and for the most part, that's worked pretty well. It's done the job. But on more recent versions of iOS, it's got a little bit clunky, in my opinion, so selecting the dates and times for your reminders isn't as easy as it used to be. Still perfectly accessible, but just not quite as easy to use. And since I've moved away from the Mac, one of the things that I've not liked is that there's no Apple Reminders app on Windows, so I've not been able to get those reminders that I've set synchronized over to my laptop and get notifications on there as well. So I was looking for something that was a bit easier to use and a bit more kind of cross-platform that I could use on my laptop as well. And the app that I've settled on is Todoist. So that's spelled T-O-D-O-I-S-T, all one word. And I've been using it for a couple of weeks now and finding it really good, really useful. It's as simple or as complex as you like in a lot of ways. So for the most part, it's just a case of adding tasks and setting reminders, and they've made it very easy to do that. But also, if you get kind of deeper into it, you can set up projects and assign tasks to different projects, which are basically like folders. So I'll show you how I've got mine set up in a minute. You can share your projects and task lists with other people and assign tasks to each other. You can set priorities. If you pay for the premium subscription, which isn't, I think it's about £50 a year, so not too bad. But you might want to check the App Store or Play Store for accurate pricing, obviously. But if you're on the premium plan, you can set up different filters and labels to kind of bring your tasks together, bring related tasks together and, you know, link them. You can set location-based reminders, so it'll remind you when you get to a place or leave a place, similar to what the Apple Reminders one offers. There's all sorts of things you can do, and I'm not really using much of these features. I've kept mine pretty simple, and I'm not on the premium plan, I'm just on the free plan. But it does the job for me, so I thought I'd show you a bit of how this works and a little bit of my setup in the hope that that gives you a bit of a starting point as well. So I'm going to navigate to the app on my home screen.
Todoist, two new items.
Now straight away we've got something quite useful there. So it said two new items. So that tells me that I've got two tasks on my list for today. And that will update based on how much you've got on your list for that day. And when you tick things off as well, that number will go down. So straight away, just from the icon, you can kind of get a feel for how much you've got to do. So I'll double tap to open this.
Todoist, more actions, button, today, heading.
So the first screen you come to by default, you can change this, but the default screen that you come to is the today view, which I quite like. That just, as soon as I open it up, that gives me a nice little view of tasks that are due today. So let's have a flick through this and see what it's like.
3 Jewel, Thursday, heading. Todoist app demo, 0/3, project, Tech Talk Studio microphone, button.
So what's going on there? So that is Todoist app demo. So that's the name of the task. It said 0/3 because I've added a couple of subtasks to this just to show you how that works. And that means that 0 of those 3 subtasks have been completed. And it said project, Tech Talk. So that is the project that task is assigned to, so the folder that task is in, basically. But this view just shows you all your tasks, regardless of project. As long as the date for the task is set to today, it will show up here. So that was the first one. There's another one on here as well, so I'll click to the right.
Arrange Amazon return collection. 1 comment. Project. Inbox. Button.
So that is something that I need to do, actually. So we're returning an item that we ordered from Amazon, so that's a task for me to make sure I arrange to get that collected. And that says 1 comment because I've left a comment with the tracking number on there. And the reason I did that, again, this is the benefit of the cross-platform side. I'm going to arrange that collection on my laptop because it's easier. But the tracking number was on my phone. So I put the tracking number as a comment, and then that way I can easily get that on my laptop as well. And that said, project inbox. So the inbox is, well, the idea of this is that the inbox is where tasks go by default, and that gives you a way to just quickly note down a task. So let's say you're in a meeting and somebody says, okay, I'll give you this action. You can quickly make a note of that, and then by default it will go to your inbox, and then later on down the line you can go through and go, right, okay, that's for tech talk, that's for work, and that's for, you know, this, and that's for that. And then you can move your tasks around. But you could just stick to, again, this is the benefit of it being simple. If you want, you could just have everything in the inbox if you really wanted to. But that's just a way to keep things organized. So I want to focus on how you add tasks to this, which might sound a bit boring, but bear with me because there is something pretty cool in here. So at the bottom of this screen, there is a button that says Quick Add.
Quick Add button. Task name, text field, is editing, insertion point at start.
Now I'm just going to go through this screen. So the first thing you've got, once you double tap on Quick Add, is task name.
Description, text field.
A description, so you can add a bit more detail in there if you want to.
Date, today, button.
That's the date that it's due. Now this is quite context sensitive, is this Quick Add. So because I'm on the today view, it's automatically set the task as today.
Set priority, button. Reminders, button. More task actions, button.
In the more actions thing is, if I was sharing this with someone, then I could assign it to someone. If I had labels set up, I could set them, which to be honest, I don't quite understand what they do. As I said, I'm not using all the features. If I was on premium, I could add a location there for it to remind me, but usually I don't really go in there, to be honest.
Project, inbox, button.
So if you did want to assign it to a project, you can do it from here, but by default it goes to the inbox.
Add, diamond, button.
And then there's the add button, which is dimmed at the minute because we've not got any details in here. Now, we could go through and fill in all that info manually, you know, select a date, set the priority and set the project and all that kind of stuff. But we don't have to. If I go back to the task name at the top.
Discard, but task name, text field, is editing, character mode, insertion point at start, Braille screen input.
Now I've gone into Braille screen input because I just find that quicker to type stuff in. Now let's say I want to add a task to catch up on my emails and I want that due tomorrow. It's a high priority task and I want it assigned to my work project. Check this out. So I'm going to put in
catch up on emails.
So catch up on emails, that's the task name. I'm now going to write the word tomorrow, followed by a space.
Tomorrow.
And I'm then going to write P1. So the letter P and then the number 1. And a space. Now it's not said anything, but it has done stuff and I'll show you in a minute. And then the next thing I want to do is type a hashtag and then start typing the word work. So I'm going to come out of Braille screen input for this because I just find it a little bit easier to do this bit on the normal keyboard.
Stopping Braille screen input.
So a hashtag.
Hash symbol. Hash sim W. O. R. Selected. Work man with a laptop.
So I've already got a project called work, so I'm going to double tap on that.
Task name. Text field.
Now let's go through this screen and see what's happened.
Description. Text field. Task name, text field, is editing, catch up on emails, due date, for Joule, space, priority, priority one, space, project, work man with a laptop, space.
Now we could go through all those items on the screen individually and we'd see it there as well, but you can hear everything that's been done from that task name field. So just by using that natural language almost and those little shortcuts, it's set the task name as catch up with emails, it's set the due date as tomorrow, it's put it as a priority one task from me typing P1. And then by putting a hashtag and starting to type the word work, it's automatically put that into the work project. So you don't have to go through and select a date and go through that little calendar thing and select a time and all that kind of stuff. You can just type in pretty naturally, really. If I wanted to, I could have written something different in there. So for example, instead of saying tomorrow, let's say I wanted it to be due on Tuesday, I could just write the word Tuesday and it would put that in for the following Tuesday. If I wanted it to be a specific date, I could just type in a date. And again, you can be quite loose with that. So I could put, say, 14 JUL for 14th of July, or I could put 14.07, and it would pick up on that and set that as the due date. Priorities, there are four priority levels, P1 being the highest and P4 being the lowest. So again, you can just type in P1 to 4. So there's all sorts of these little shortcodes that just make adding tasks really, really nice and really easy. So I'm going to quickly flick through this screen and just get to add.
Date, set, remind, more tab, project, work, man, add, button.
So click on add.
Task name, text field, is editing, character mode, insertion point to start.
Now by default, you're put into a new task. Once you've added a task, it puts you back into like a blank one in case you wanted to add more. But I don't need to do that. So you can either click on discard at the top, or you can just do the two finger scrub gesture to go back.
Today, heading.
And now we're back on that today screen. So now, if we go to, there are four tabs at the bottom. There's today, upcoming, which gives you a general kind of calendar view of your tasks. Search, which is where you can obviously type in to search for a task. And then browse, which is where you can go into your individual projects. So if we now go to upcoming.
Upcoming tab, 2 of 4, selected. Upcoming tab, upcoming, heading.
And then we can navigate by headings here. So if we have a look at tomorrow's date.
3 JUL, today. Thursday, 4 JUL, tomorrow. Friday, heading.
And then flick to the right.
Timesheet, 10. One reminder, project, work man with a laptop, button.
So I've got a reminder set for every Friday to remind me to do my timesheet at work. If we flick to the right again.
Catch up on emails, priority 1, project, work man with a laptop, button.
So there you go, you've got catch up with emails as the name. It tells me that it's priority 1, and we could tell from the heading before that that's due today. Now, by default, that's not actually going to remind me of that task. It's just going to put it in my today view when it comes to tomorrow, obviously. So what we could have done is, if we wanted it to remind us at a specific time, we could have put, instead of just putting tomorrow, if we put tomorrow space 10 a.m. or tomorrow space 10.00, so again, another thing you can be quite loose with, that would have set a reminder for tomorrow at 10 a.m. so it would give me a notification at that time, which is what I've done for the timesheet reminder that you saw above. So again, you really don't have to give much thought to it. So when you're adding tasks, you can be quite natural, and that works well for me. So I can just quickly type stuff in. I don't really have to think about it. I can just type it in, type a name, type when it's due. And I've never had an occasion where it's got it wrong or got confused, to be honest. So that works really nicely. So how do you manage tasks and tick tasks off, if you like? So I'm going to go back to the today view, and we'll have a look at that Todoist app demo task that I showed you, because that's got some subtasks in there as well. So again, a little bit more advanced, I guess.
Today, tab, 1 of 4, selected, today, tab, arrange Amazon route, Todoist app demo, 3 JUL, Thursday, heading, Todoist app demo, 0/3, project, Tech Talk Studio My.
So there it is. Now this has got subtasks, so I'm going to double tap on the task itself.
Todoist app, sheet grabber, button, activate to dismiss pop-up window, button.
Now I'm going to navigate by headings until we hear subtasks.
Subtasks, 0/3, heading.
And these are some subtasks I've added to that. So I'll flick to the right.
Record demo, button. Edit recording, button. Send in finished version, button.
So there's the three tasks. So you could look at it as three tasks, or you could look at it as four tasks, because there's the task itself and then the steps related to it. So if we want to tick those off, they've made really good use of the actions rotor. So if I go back a couple of steps, because for the one of record the demo, I mean, I'm midway through that, so I think we can tick that one off.
Record demo, button.
So all I need to do, in fact, I'll show you what's on the actions rotor first. So I'm going to do a flick down.
Complete. Reschedule.
You can easily reschedule it there.
Drag item. Activate, default.
Now activate will take you into the task details that we saw earlier. So task name, description, date, priority, etc. But if we navigate to that task and just do a one finger flick down.
Complete.
There's complete, so double tap.
Edit recording, button.
And now that task has disappeared. So if I navigate through the subtasks again.
Subtasks, 1/3, heading.
So it tells me that 1 out of 3 has now been done. And if we flick to the right.
Edit recording, button. Send in finished version. Completed, button.
Now for some reason, there's a little bit of a glitch with this where it says the word completed, even though it hasn't been. So that is a little bit confusing, but the way to look at it, there is a section specifically for completed tasks, and that's in the browse section. So the way to look at it is, if a task is in your today view, or you're in a project and it's in the list of tasks related to that project, unless you specifically selected it to show completed tasks, then it's not actually completed. And another way you can tell is if I flick down on that.
Complete.
It still says complete. So I don't really know where that completed announcement comes from. But it's definitely not been completed, whereas the record demo version has, because it's disappeared. So if I was to go into the completed tasks, I would now see it there. And you can untick it from there if you say you completed it by accident and you wanted to get it back. You can do that from there. I'm just going to very quickly, to wrap this up, talk about projects. So as I've said, these are folders, essentially. So I'm just going to show you how I've set mine up. And as I said, I'm really not doing it that complicated. So if we go to Browse.
Browse, tab, 4 of 4.
And then once again, we navigate by headings to get to My Projects.
My Projects, heading.
Now I've got 3 projects here.
Home, house with garden. 1 task, button.
So there's a home project, which is like all my boring house jobs that I need to do. Just generally, you know, around the house.
Tech Talk studio microphone. 4 tasks, button.
There's my Tech Talk task, which funnily enough is all things related to Tech Talk.
Work man with a laptop. 2 tasks, button.
And then the third project that I've got is work. So that's all my work related stuff. And by the way, those emojis, so it says like home, house with garden, Tech Talk, studio microphone, they were added by me because by default, it gave me a home project with the house emoji. And I just carried it on for Tech Talk and work because, you know, why not? Just makes it a bit more fun. But I know some people find emojis irritating. So don't worry, you don't have to have them. You can name these however you want. But the way I've done it is I've just got those 3 projects and then anything that doesn't really fit in those projects, like for example, the Amazon collection, I just leave those in the inbox. And if I was to double tap on any of those projects, I would see all the tasks. They're still to be completed. They're part of that project. So regardless of when they're upcoming, even if there was a task due in, say, 2 weeks on my home project, if I was to double tap on that, I would see that task there. It would just be a list of all tasks in that project. So that's a very quick overview of Todoist and how I'm using it. That's not even scratching the surface of all its features, especially if you pay for the premium version. There's a hell of a lot you can do there. But I'm just using it as quite a simple task manager. And I'm finding it really really nice. I really love that way you can enter tasks using natural language. That's just made it so easy. And I really like how much use they've made of the actions rotor. So being able to quickly and easily tick tasks off and reschedule them just by swiping down is with one finger is really nice. As well as being accessible on iOS, it also works really well on Windows, and it also works really nicely with TalkBack on Android as well. I've done some testing on there very briefly, and it's fully accessible on there as well. So it's an app that I would definitely recommend. As I said, the free version for me has got everything I need, but you could do the premium if you really wanted to. But if you're looking for a really accessible task manager, then give that a go. So there you go. That's my that's just some of my thoughts on the Todoist app that I discovered recently. Do you guys use tech to help keep yourselves organized, Hubert?
For me, I'm still a big fan of Habitica. So as a quick reminder, it's an app we demoed on the Tech Talk last year, which combines gaming with a to-do / habit / dailies kind of task manager app where you complete your to-dos, dailies, improve your habits, and at the same time, you level up your in-game character find equipment, pets and things like that, and complete quests. So for me, who is a massive gamer, it combines productivity with gaming, which is what I need to keep me motivated, I think, sometimes. So that, for me, still is kind of the app to go to manage all my work and my personal stuff. And I've still discovered some kind of new extra settings that you can do with certain regular tasks, which has made the app even more essential for me.
Yeah, and that is kind of nice. Something that I didn't mention in the that demo there of Todoist was that this does have like a... I think it's turned off by default, but you can set daily and weekly goals for how many tasks you want to complete in a day and a week. And then it will kind of... It kind of gamifies it. It just builds it up as a streak, basically, so you can keep your daily and weekly streaks going. And I think there's a bit of like a... It's not something I really looked at, to be honest, but I think there's a bit of a competitive type nature with that. There's different levels you can get to, but yeah, it's more just if you're interested in sort of keeping those numbers going up, that works for more of a game as such.
I think it depends if you're a gamer or not. Yeah, it depends if you're a gamer or not, I think, with, you know, sometimes people are motivated by other things. For me, gaming is what motivates me, so having that combined works really well. But other people, for example, may find, you know, other things a little bit more motivational that can be combined with a task manager app.
Yeah. Natalie, do you use anything?
Yeah, I do. I also like the boring one in the group because I tend to go native. So I'm an Apple iPhone user, and I use the Reminders app a lot. I find that very handy, very helpful. And I will agree it's got its drawbacks at times, but it's a case of what you're used to and what you like, and I find it works very well for me. I have experimented a bit with the Microsoft To-Do List app for work purposes, and that can be good because what that does is it connects to your emails. So if you flag an email to follow up later, and you might have it set up so it actually appears in a separate follow-up folder like I do, you can set a date on that and a reminder on that, and that will also then link to your To-Do List app, so it will appear on there. So you can get a reminder on your phone and or on your desktop. And I found that seemed to work quite well at work when I was tracking big projects that I wasn't overseeing, but I was a cog in the wheel of. But yeah, I'm sorry, I'm boring. I like reminders.
No, that's not boring. It's fair enough. I mean, I did use that for a long time, and you know, having that integration, to be fair, is nice because you can, with that, you can obviously ask Siri to set reminders. I mean, no guarantee that works, of course, because it's Siri. But, you know, that option is there.
It tends to work well for me. And I have noticed, actually, in one of the recent updates to iOS, reminders now appear in your calendar as well, which might be beneficial to some people. On the whole, it doesn't really bother me one way or the other. But I did think that maybe that is a useful feature for people rather than having to jump between apps. I think that's the big thing, isn't it, for a lot of us, is
yeah,
all these things can be useful, but actually what's really useful is when they talk to each other.
Yeah, yeah, 100%. And I must admit, one thing that I do miss from the Reminders app is that the... Because a lot of the time I get stuff showing up on my watch unless I'm actually on my phone. And the vibration from the Reminders app is slightly different, so you kind of know that that's a reminder, whereas on Todoist and all the others that I've tried, it just comes through as like a standard notification. So if you're getting loads of notifications in a day, the haptic is kind of the same, it's just the default one, so you can kind of, if you're not careful, you could kind of miss it, you know, if you're getting like notifications from a group chat or something and then something else comes in.
And there is always that one to remind people of. Again, the smart speakers usually have a remind me feature, which I find quite good as well. Because sometimes if you're running around like a headless chicken, maybe packing for a holiday, you can shout at it, remind me, and it will do it for you.
Yeah, nice. Well, let us know what sort of tech are you using to keep yourself on track, manage your tasks or your list, and just generally keep yourselves organised. Techtalk@rnib.org.uk.
time now on RNIB Connect Radio on Tech Talk for some tech nostalgia. Maybe a look to the future as well, as we are back to our tech timeline. And joining me today to, well, take a bit of a trip down tech memory lane is our very own Jennifer Murray. Jennifer, thank you for joining us.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
So let's talk tech, shall we? We've both been using assistive tech for quite a while, pretty much. So we've got plenty of memories to share. Looking back as far as you can, what would you say was your first piece of assistive technology that you've used?
One of the things I'd probably touch upon here is the Talking Books player that I used to have. It was quite big and bulky. You definitely had to plug it in. It came with the Talking Books on tape. You would use all these knobs and dials to kind of fast forward, rewind. The actual tapes themselves would come in a wallet, which you would have like a label which you could always flip over when you were finished with the book. But yeah, certainly I wanted to touch upon the Talking Book player and the associated equipment for that, because that is a piece of technology. If you enjoy reading books and listening to audiobooks, based on how good the narrators are, you know that over time that's evolved and it's gradually gotten smaller. You know, the players have changed in terms of the DAISY players, the digital accessible information system, I believe it's called. And it allowed you to bookmark your place within a book, so you wouldn't have to start from the start. As technology went on, it went from the tapes to then CDs, which were sent out in the post, and you just turned it over to send back to the RNIB Talking Book service, and they would post out the next batch of CDs, and you could play these CDs, DAISY discs, on a Victor Reader stream, for example, or other versions of that player. And then it gradually went down to the likes of Victor Reader streams with USB slots where you can connect it to your computer, like a pen drive, or you could also have like an SD card by which I guess you could put the book onto, and so on. It just got smaller and smaller, more sophisticated ways of accessing Talking Books. So there was no need to, you know, have a big, massive, bulky machine, which would be quite difficult to carry around. The smaller the technology and the sizes of the machine got, the easier it was to travel with, to take from one place to another, and so on.
Yeah, I had one of these Talking Book players. Well, it was actually just a basic tape player, but it was one of these heavy carry handle ones, which back then I think didn't even have a CD compartment inside. It was just a tape player with a kind of radio slot inside, and that's how old school it was. And my books would be not kind of in a wallet, but more in this kind of big rectangular box with tapes with tapes in their individual boxes lined up alongside each other, which, yeah, it wasn't a setup you could probably easily travel with, I'd say. Let's move on now to this one. It's quite a tricky question, though, because we've used so much assistive technology, but what would you say is your favourite piece of assistive tech?
Nowadays, I would be lost without my iPhone, because, yes, you could argue that it's universal, but the beauty of the iPhone is that it's got built-in speech. So in the past, for example, you used to have to consult a list of compatible Nokia mobile phones. I used to have to go to the shop and feel the buttons to know what it felt like, whether it was definitely manageable, pick one that was on that specific list, pay to get it sent away to get this software installed, and wait for its return, and that's it. Nowadays, you have the likes of the iPhone, which is what I have. I have an iPhone 14, and I've had various versions of the iPhone. And as many of us know, besides other accessibility features and magnification and high contrast and so on, there's also the built-in voiceover feature. It was good to have Nokias which had speech installed, but you did have to pay for that, whereas voiceover and other accessibility features are already integrated into devices nowadays.
Yeah, I had a Talks Nokia. I remember them, they were quite fun actually. My one, I had it until 2013 actually, which for a lot of people was quite late. I only got into the iPhones about 12 years ago. Mind you, I'm certainly glad I did. So let's talk about the tech you use currently. You know, you've mentioned the iPhone, which helps you a lot from a speech point of view and accessibility. But what other technology is currently making a difference in your life?
I am also hearing impaired, and I have had various types of hearing aids since the age of 6. Nowadays, I have a pair of Bluetooth-enabled hearing aids, which allow me to use the Bluetooth on my phone, and I can toggle it on and off as and when required, but it now means that I don't have to carry around over-the-ear headphones when travelling or for other purposes or even taking a call. I can use the phone normally without headphones, but I also like to have the option of hands-free. And the beauty of having the Bluetooth hearing aids is that I can get the audio streamed straight to my ears. I turn on the Bluetooth and I can hear voiceover in both of my ears. I can stream music, I can listen to books, I can do much more. If there's any, for example, notifications in which I don't want everyone to hear, I can very quickly toggle on my Bluetooth setting on the phone and it'll go straight to my ears, and I can hear that notification in my own time, in privacy, and that means that it's not being read out loud for the whole world to hear.
Now then, let's go a bit more fantasy then. Let's say, you know, you can have, you know, a favourite piece of assistive technology revived, brought back to life, back into fashion. What would it be?
I'm kind of sticking with the iPhone because there is something that I would like to see reintroduced specifically for the models that have Face ID only. It's an absolute nightmare. For example, if you have to get your iPhone out and you're trying to pay for something and for some reason the Face ID doesn't work, then you're having to type in your passcode really, really quickly. And obviously, if you don't have it connected to headphones or, in my case, the Bluetooth hearing aids, then people can hear the numbers that you're typing in. So, you know, it would be absolutely amazing if Apple were to integrate a sensor on all of their phones, rather like the home button, which iPhone models, well, certainly older iPhone models have. If you have Touch ID, that's fantastic for paying for things very, very quickly. You're not faffing around typing in your passcode when the Face ID function decides not to work properly. So it would be amazing if there was some kind of sensor integrated into the phones. Doesn't have to be anything big. If we knew exactly where it was, we could just set up a fingerprint like what you did in the past, and you could have that ability to pay with your finger. You could use your face, or you could type in your passcode if it really has to be the case. So yeah, bring back Touch ID sooner rather than later, because there are certain frustrations and times when it's very much needed. For example, if you're trying to pay for something, like I've said before, or if you've enabled the screen curtain, sometimes you have to disable it. You forget that it's maybe been enabled. You pass your phone to someone else when you are traveling and you want your boarding pass scanned at the airport and stuff, then you have to remember to turn off the screen curtain, deactivate voiceover so that the sighted individual doesn't accidentally touch something when they're scanning your boarding pass or they're helping you to find the card reader for payment purposes and so on.
Plus, another good thing with Touch ID, which I quite liked, and laziness/convenience alert, it's being able to unlock your phone when you're in your pocket. So I was walking from the train station to work, and I wanted to, I think, get a podcast playing or something or other. And, you know, I had to take my phone out while walking, unlock it with Face ID, then do what I needed to do. It would have just been much simpler if I could just put my hand in my pocket, bang, unlock the phone, do what I needed to do, press the lock button, and I'm done. But no, you had to take your phone out, scan your face, and it's nice to have the option. I think having the choice, I'm used to using Face ID and I'm comfortable with it, but there are certain aspects of Touch ID that I miss that I think certainly can't be irreplaceable. Well, there you go then, a little journey through technology and time there with me and our very own Jennifer Murray. Thank you very much for joining us here on RNIB Connect Radio. And if you'd like to take a trip down your tech memory lane, why don't you get in touch? techtalk@rnib.org.uk. If you want to talk your technology history, then why not get in touch and we will have you on. Jennifer Murray, thank you very much for joining us here on RNIB Connect Radio.
That's all we've got time for this week. Thank you so much, as always, for tuning in and being with us. We'll be back with you same time, same place next week. But in the meantime, if you've got any comments or questions or anything you want to share with us, please do get in touch. We'd love to hear from you. techtalk@rnib.org.uk is our email address. From me, Callum Stoneman, Hubert Pavelkovich and Natalie Curran, bye for now.
Until next time.
Bye.
Bye-bye.